Kia ora koutou and welcome to the show. Thank you to all our listeners who've returned for a sixth listen. This will be now to get down to earth with Robert and Robin Guyton. We've got in the studio this afternoon a very special person, man about the town, man of mystery, emperor of planet vegan, Jordan Wyatt, who we're going to talk to shortly. But first, Rob, what have you got planned for the afternoon?
I'm going to talk about the origins of our organic fig crop and also about all the different berries that we grow really well in Riverton.
Fantastic. And I'm going to have a discussion with you and Jordan, if he's still here in the studio, about composting. Fascinating topic, composting. Let's swing over to Jordan, sitting to your left there, Rob, and ask him, what are you doing in the studio, Jordan?
Well, I just found the door was open. I thought I'd just wander in.
Wandered in, like a lost chicken.
These radio stations have got a lot of sort of copper wiring in the walls and stuff. Uh-huh. And it's good value at the scrap market.
You've come with a message, and your message is about World Vegan Day. Is that correct?
I come in peace, yes.
What can you tell us about
World
that?
Vegan Day is on the 1st of November, and it's celebrated by vegans all around the world. And a vegan is someone who doesn't want to harm or kill other animals. So that means we don't kill other animals for their flesh, or we don't take their milk or their eggs, we don't wear their skin, etc. And World Vegan Day started in about 1944, is when the whole vegan thing sort of started, when we first landed from Planet Vegan.
Yes. What a day, what an exciting day that was.
Fabulous day.
Yes.
What is it, Kalu Kalei?
Kalu Kalei.
Yeah. And so all around the world, vegans are having celebrations of veganism and what we can do to help the planet, to help other animals, to be more sustainable, and to come in peace.
Yeah, but where's the fun in that? How can vegans celebrate if you can't wrap yourself in animal skins and eat them?
There's a lot of fireworks going off, so how can you not celebrate with
the fireworks
going?
Yeah. And will there be fireworks in Invercargill here? Because I know you've got something planned. You've got something of an evening.
Well, it's not going to be a very good evening because we got the fireworks, but then we found the promenade, and that's just during daylight hours, so
right.
It kind of spoiled. There'll be a loud noise, though. You'll hear a loud noise coming from the library at about 5 p.m. I don't know, it won't be that dark by then.
Loud noises and libraries don't really go together that well, do they?
But oh, no. The librarians will be going, shh, and lots of
yes, that's right. And you'll have food?
Oh, we might have food. Someone has spread that rumour, I've heard. Yes, so we're planning to have food and an event at the library, and it's quite fun to combine books and food, as well as loud noises.
Again, that's going to upset the librarians. Rob, what are your thoughts?
I was just wondering, how many in the Invercargill Vegan Society?
Well, at any given time, we have about 10 members here. So people come, people go. We have students and people that train, and they take advantage of our lovely zero-fee scheme, and they get what they want, and then they take off back to Auckland. And
yep.
So we have normally about 10 to about 12 at the moment.
And you have a monthly meeting, or how do you
meet? Monthly potluck, yes. So we all bring food to someone's house and have a great time.
Yeah, share recipes and ideas.
Yeah, and sometimes fireworks too.
What if someone gets it wrong and they bring something with eggs in? Do you have a bit of a panic?
We have a ceremony for that. It's called whipping.
Whipping and paddling.
I think you're kind to all living beings.
Oh, no.
And they have to sit and eat their food in the atrium.
We don't use feathers, but we do the tarring part as well.
Uh-huh. But I've been to one of your meals, and I'll tell you what, it was fantastic. And one thing I noticed about vegans is food presentation is really important. Well, it seems to be really important to you because everything looked good enough to eat.
Well, that's good, because it's made it mostly of formaldehyde and plastic with a little bit of fiberglass to sort of give it fibre and content.
It's not true at all. The food was absolutely delicious, and I can't recall exactly what was served up that night, but you take photographs of your food,
yes.
And you publish a copy or a record of every vegan meal that you have, shared vegan meal, on your website.
Yes.
Blog or website?
Coexisting.co.nz and the Invercargill Vegan Society's website at invsoc.org.nz. Lots of it. Sounds almost like a radio. You're listening to radio, INVSOC.
Do you not do a radio show?
Well, we have a podcast where we cover these things.
Yep.
We take a recording at our potlucks, and we like to ask people. We bring giant apples, and they say, wow, that's the size of a six-year-old's head. How did you do it, Mr. Guyton?
Yes, so. Pumped it full of goodness, organic goodness. Yeah, no, I hang around your website like a blowfly, looking for updates.
I heard a person on the radio recently was talking about the good kind of the drone flies and they help pollinate or something.
Really?
When the honeybees were going bad.
Do
and
tell.
Not to squash them like we might want to. And someone else was talking about something about planting protein to grow the rhubarb, and I was thinking, oh, I'm not so keen on using the heads of aquatic animals.
No, you're so easy to upset.
Yes,
you
I heard,
vegans.
I heard someone being very PC calling them protein. But I thought I'd bring in a little sample of saw people on the radio land. It's called textured soy protein, also called textured vegetable protein, TVP. And it's basically soy flour and you can see it's kind of a hard lunar surface looking kind of thing. I believe the term for this is regolith. Yes, you just add water and it doubles in size and boom, and it's basically mince is what it is. But it's pure protein. When it's like this, it's 90% protein by content without the water.
Okay, so you're saying this is a good thing?
For rhubarb, yes.
For rhubarb.
So we'd add a little bit of water, we'd plant it with the rhubarb, she'll be right as rain.
I met a young man who suggested that a good place to empty the contents of your compost toilet would be at the roots of the rhubarb, and then you could grow poobarb.
Yeah. Wow, you people on the poo, I haven't.
Now, you also raise chickens as well as raising all hell as a vegan.
I look after chickens, yes, and most of them are rescued hens, and I look after them very well. And one of them's not feeling quite well. She's sort of breaking down inside her female body from all the eggs that we've made them lay. They have issues with that, but that's Curious Hen, who I write about frequently.
Yes,
hi, Curious Hen, if she's listening.
She is, too.
But I love looking after them, and it's nice to look after the chickens that are from farms and see them grow their feathers back.
So how do you rescue a chicken if you'd like to? Someone out there might want to,
well,
adopt one?
My friends contact the farmers and they deal with them legally. Otherwise, there's always the fun of breaking in the middle of the night, as the ones on television do.
With your wire cutters, and your bandana.
This Robert Guyton seems to know a lot about it.
I read a lot.
I mean, we watched what's that movie called? The Chicken Run?
Or? Oh, the animation one?
In what way do you look after your chickens differently than the average person might?
Well, the average person's kind of stingy with the pets. I always make sure they all get 5 pets a day minimum, otherwise,
pets.
It puts a luster into the feathers.
Yeah, cow's pet. No, it's chickens we're talking about.
Not again.
No, but Robin and I were discussing this on the way into town, on the way into the studio here, and we wondered, what do you do with their eggs? I mean, do they still lay eggs, your hens?
Well, some of them do, and I break them and they eat their eggs, because that's what eggs are for. They're for the hens to eat when they're born. They peep their way up with their egg tooth.
That is true.
People say hen's teeth, but every hen's born with a tooth.
Ah, they are too. Except they're not hens then, are they? They're chicks, but quite right.
They're still
good
female
point.
Hens,
Yeah. Did you know that Tuatara, baby Tuatara, also have an egg tooth that they scrape through?
I've heard that. Yeah.
And it drops off. I always wondered if anyone... imagine if you had a collection.
Well, you know when you rattle a can or something, like maybe a spray paint can, thing that rattles around?
That could be Tuatara egg tooth. Who'd have thought?
They're not an endangered species. You know, all the spray paint in the world's got a Tuatara egg tooth in it.
Your hens look very at home, very comfortable. And you live in a... it's not a huge suburban property. And how many hens do you run? Well, how many hens do you coexist with?
Peacefully. I coexist with 6 non-human animals. They get along quite well with this human animal.
Yeah, with that human animal sitting right there. What do you feed them?
Well, what would I say was at the potluck? There was fiberglass and formaldehyde or something.
Leftovers.
They normally have rolled oats, and they have rolled oats along with greens and bread out of my hand. And that's happy and healthy hens and cheap to run as well.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Well, anybody, as you mentioned earlier, anybody who would like to see your hens, I suppose they could come and visit you. Though I won't give away the location of your happy hen run.
I'm sure.
But they could look on your website. And
absolutely. Coexisting.co.nz. I got to get a plug in.
Is that what it was called? Coexisting.co.nz?
Yes.
Very good. Very good.
I thought you said you frequent it like a blowfly.
I do, but I've got a memory of a blowfly as well. So therein lies the problem. Now tell me just one more time, this vegan celebratory meal, it's on what date and it's where?
1st of November, which is World Vegan Day. It's at the library and we're planning for 5:30 p.m. So we hope that anyone called Guyton will be allowed to just sort of wander in freely and bring their own fireworks, you know, BYOF.
Yes, fantastic. What about members of the public?
They're absolutely welcome to wander in. There'll be a lot of stray dogs wandering in, some members of the public too. You know, it'll be a happy mix. Fireworks, dogs, loud noises, members of the public, Guytons.
And your feathered friends?
Oh, well, that might be pushing it a little bit too far. The librarians are, I better not get them angry. I'll wait till after and tell them they get kind of crotchety about the fireworks going off.
It was very interesting talking with you. Look, do hang around, Jordan, for
like
the rest of the
program. A blowfly or a drone fly?
Both, and you've promised us a song. You're a Michael Jackson fan, and I suggested to you that you might like to entertain us, and you said you'd at least hum.
Really?
Yes, don't feel under any pressure now, because Robin is going to tell us a little bit about the food cooperative out in Riverton, and while she does that, you might like to gather your song. Robin.
Yes, I thought it'd be really nice to talk about how we started our food co-op out at Riverton. There's a whole lot now starting around New Zealand, and we are mentors for different food co-ops starting all around Southland and New Zealand. So there's one now at Tokonui, there's one in Gore, one started in Invercargill several years ago, but it sort of stopped working because there wasn't enough people with time to help run it. And we started ours in the day when we arrived in Riverton in the mid-80s. You couldn't even buy a loaf of brown bread in the Riverton shops. And after being in Dunedin, where there was lots of opportunities for vegetarian food and wholemeal this and even some organic products, it seemed quite a bit of a desert, just the south and the supermarket at the time. And we were several young mums with children, and we thought we'd like to work together. And we knew there was organic oranges at Kerikeri, and there was organic avocados.
It was just a matter of getting them down to Riverton, wasn't it?
So I worked as a group, and we started getting boxes of fruit mainly, and then BioGrain started up in Dunedin and Ashburton. So we started getting flour and grain and oats. And so in those days, it was very exciting to meet in our garage, it was, and share out the bags of all these goodies.
You never know who you would find. I'd go out there looking for a tool, or such tools as I had, and there'd be people out there buying stuff from you.
Yeah,
it was most mysterious.
It wasn't really, it was a co-op, and so we didn't actually sell stuff. We bought it as a group and shared
right.
it as a group.
Yep.
And it got very popular, especially when we had Alan Hammond and his wife. They had quite a big property at Fruitlands, and they were growing organic every fruit you can imagine. They had a beautiful mixed orchard, so there was plums.
Cherries, beautiful cherries, and all those apples that used to arrive late at night at our place.
Apricots, peaches, plums, nashi pears.
All organically grown,
And they're only $1 a kilo, and the stone fruit was $2 a kilo. So suddenly we had about 60 families in organic food coppers, very good value. And we outgrew the garage, and we started to think that maybe the council would get suspicious of all the freight trucks coming up our street and delivering things and all the cars. So.
Or that our own car would rebel and take off, not having a place to spend the night.
It never did anyway.
No, it didn't.
So we started an environment centre. In the corner of the environment centre, we had the food co-op, and it's been going now for 22 years in total. And for the last 16 years, it's been in the environment centre building in one corner of it. And it now works as a not-for-profit shop. And so we have volunteers do almost all the work as voluntary, apart from the banking and bill paying. We pay someone to do that. And so it's still run as a co-op, and people take a turn at being the shopkeeper and bagging the produce up. And it means we can have the cheapest prices for organic food in Southland. And people come from wide and far. Travellers especially like coming in because we're in the Lonely Planet book. And so we have people from all around the world call in, and they really appreciate what we've got and the prices.
Some people pick up bananas or oranges and say to me when I'm serving in there sometimes, are these organic? And I just look at them sideways. Of course they're organic. We have the only fully organic, 100% organic farmers market in the whole of New Zealand, as I understand, operating over the summer period.
Yes, we have as well. It's quite small at the moment because we've lost some of our suppliers for shifting away and things like that. But the nice thing about the food co-op is that we first of all get stuff locally. That's our first aim, and then we get it from Southland and then South Island and New Zealand and a few things from overseas. It's really nice to support the local growers and local people first, and so that's why we try and as much as possible have local food, but we do need more organic growers in Southland. An organic market garden will be great, and so I'm hoping that will build up. I know that Nathan and his wife are doing a box system starting in Invercargill.
That's right.
That
was tremendously popular, wasn't it? We ran a similar one for a short time, and gosh, we were overloaded with people wanting food to be bought in a box to be dispersed around families in Invercargill.
So if anyone out there in Southland who enjoys growing food and you'd like to grow
and who wouldn't?
A bit more for it to supply either the Love Local box system in Invercargill or the Riverton Co-op, we'd really love to hear from you. That food is really appreciated by people who can't grow their own or are too busy, and I think it'd be a great little money spinner during recession.
Now, Rob, I'd like to spring a question on our guest, Jordan Wyatt, with regard to the food cooperative. Jordan, you eat good food, you eat vegan food.
I eat all good food, I believe.
Anything that's left lying around on the table gets eaten by you. But
promoted by a guy.
Do you eat organic? That's my question.
I try to. And I've had the proposition pop to me. Do you say pop to me by a proposition?
Yeah.
By one, I call her Sister Judith. You might call her Judith Robinson.
Yes, I know Judith very well.
Hello, Sister Judith Robinson. about something about soy all being GE, which of course a large percentage of it is, but not the vegan orientated stuff, because we're already picky eaters, you could say. so it wouldn't make much sense, you know.
No. Now you've segued me into an interesting issue that's happening in Southland at the moment, and that's the feeding of GE cottonseed to our dairy cows. And I suppose you've got lots of objections about, no doubt, about dairying and how they're managed. And I can add my own objection or concern to yours with regard this importing of grain that's grown in Australia, genetically engineered grains brought to New Zealand and fed to our cows. What are your thoughts?
Cotton seed doesn't sound very like cow food.
Well, no, neither does tapioca, but they're adding that to the mix to feed their cows during the winter as well. And palm kernel expeller. I don't know. It just doesn't sound very impressive to me. Jordan, what do you think?
Sounds bloody awful, I reckon. And quite frankly, we need an Environment Southland councillor that would stand up and banish the whole thing.
We do. So. Let's scout around and see if we can find one.
They always skirt off, don't they?
While we're mulling over those possibilities, let's listen to a little music. This is a piece of music, Rob, that I think of whenever I think of you, you and me.
Love. Love.
I knew that song. Oh, it didn't finish straight away. Caught out. Get caught out a second time. I knew that song finishes all of a suddenly like a cliff, and I wasn't quite sure where that point was. So with it just trickling away in the background, we'll carry on with our discussion this afternoon. We're going to veer a little way from away from veganism and those other topics now, and do a little bit of a discussion about currants, black currants, red currants, white currants, and even gooseberries thrown in there for good measure, because it's one of those things that do particularly well down here in Southland, and we grow them at our place, Rob, and you know all about picking them.
Yeah, so I've got lots and lots of berries, and I think we're very lucky here in Southland because the berries not only do very well, they also are usually free of fungal diseases and insect pests. And so up further north, there's a lot of problems with having to spray your berries, but we never have to in Southland. Things like black currants can grow even in the shade, and so you can have them on the south of your house and they'll still fruit really well. So there's no, some don't need full sun. Strawberries like to be in the semi-shade as well. I think most berries would be that sort of type?
Maybe so, although your gooseberries tend to like being out right out in the open sun. You find a lot of gooseberries growing through central Otago in the very dry areas where they're exposed to all sorts of weathers, and it just doesn't seem to bother them at all. But certainly you're right. Southland's the place to grow berries of all sorts, and we're not bothered by pests, as you point out, except, and I daren't call them pests with Jordan in the room, but blackbirds.
Yeah, they love them. And we notice the drier the season, the more damage they do to the berries. It's more the thirstiness that the birds go for them rather than
that's
the food.
That's right. And you've reminded me of something I read very recently in the newspaper, and that was about protecting your crops of all sorts, particularly those you've just sown. If you're sowing peas, for example, in your garden bed, and the blackbirds are on the hunt. And they're on the hunt at the moment because they're nesting. We've got a nest in a tree just above nearby to our glass house, and I put a ladder up there and had a look down into the nest the other day, and there are four beautiful little blue blackbird eggs in there. And I know that the mother and the father too, no doubt, the male and the female, are busy building themselves up, building their reserves up. And the suggestion was, and it was made by Wally Richards, gardening guru. Everybody who knows anything about gardening is called a gardening guru, aren't they? He suggested that you can feed those blackbirds and dissuade them from scratching up the kinds of things that you want to have stay in the ground by, I'm going to have to say it, by feeding them chopped liver. Cooking, he suggested it, not me.
I'd give them textured soy protein. That
would work wonderfully. Well, now that's interesting.
Yeah, you mentioned protecting the crops that you sowed. I mean, you know what they say about being proactive about the crops you've sowed. A stitch in time saves
lives. They do, sowing crops, yeah. So, well, I might get a couple of those pieces of textured soy protein and give it a try at home. Mm-hmm. Because we've certainly got a pair of blackbirds there who are causing me.
Long tweezers or tongs or something.
Drop them in, yeah, no.
It's interesting about the berries we've got growing. We've also got blueberries, cranberries, different, like loganberries, tayberries, a whole lot. But in the old days, there's much more variety, and so there used to be gooseberry clubs in England, and there's up to 450 named gooseberries. And so I think we've got about 12. We've got some ones that go red when they're ripe, and we've got red early, red mid, red late. We've got some that are quite hairyish, and some more common ones. But it was really cool when we were younger, tramping into places like Macetown and Skippers. The gooseberry had regressed to old varieties and self-seeded. And so there's like some really ones that had huge spikes, they're like a porcupine. Other ones were, different shapes and sizes. Quite incredible, really.
We've managed to capture some of them to grow in our own garden. But there's one still up there on the Nevis Road that I yearn for and really regret not having taken a sample of while I was there. And it was a tiny little red gooseberry with hairs as long as needles. I mean, it didn't look that nice to eat, but I would love to have it in my collection. Look, I can see Jordan there champing at the bit. Is that the right term, champing at the bit?
Yeah, we're not so keen on putting bridles.
No, you're not. You're such a difficult person to have an ordinary conversation with.
Yeah, we don't mind the wigwam for the goose's bridle, that one, but yeah, not so much the other one.
You've got a song. You say that you've put together, I suggested to you a while ago that when you came in I might call upon you to sing, and you've jolly well come up with the goods. What have you got there, Jordan?
Well, I came up with a couple of them. One of them sort of French-related from Les Miserables, but I did the first one that you mentioned, the one Mr. Robert here suggested. He liked the Michael Jackson song Ben. He listens to it all the time when he's yearning
for...
What is it? Pining for the Fields? The Monty Python about the parrot or something?
That's
when he yearns of gooseberries gone by or something never plucked or pilfered. And he mentioned he likes the song Ben. So I thought, you know, his partner's called Robin, and I thought he's Robert. And so, Robin, the two of us need look no more. We both found what we were looking for. With a loudmouth guest to call our own, we'll never be alone. And you, my wife, will see. Having a loudmouth guest so yappy gives us a break to pee. A long, long break to pee. Talk of poop, it used to be. Now it's pee, now it's wee wee. And they keep going, something like that.
No. It's dreadfully good. Very good indeed. Ben, it's a film about rats, isn't it?
Oh, and how we should look after our rat friends, yes, and feed them textured soy protein and not chopped up liver or something, or fish heads or through rhubarb.
So you'll have to write a song and sing one next time, Rob.
I probably won't, but I mean, I couldn't match what Jordan just... And you say you've got a second one, Jordan. Are you willing to swing into that as well?
Well, I'm a loudmouth guest and you'll never be alone a toilet break. Do you hear the people singing the songs of angry rescued hens? It is the music of chicken friends who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beatings of the drums, there is a life about to start when the world's begun.
That's really something. Very good. I think think Robin's fallen in love with you, Jordan. Just, well, I know I have.
I'll give you the lyrics and you say, oh, God, oh, we've got a diss between us.
Very, very good indeed. Gosh, I don't know if we'll ever get a guest again in here quite like you. We'll have to bring you back again another time.
Well, there's a third one. Yeah, it goes to the tune of Billie Jean. You're listening to Down Earth, out every weekend. It's the thrill of the day. Feel the Guyton way. Thrilling what they say. Happy World Vegan Day.
Oh, this is really something. I might just lie down.
He's moonwalking now. Yeah. Stay down.
Yes. I promised I would, and I am. That's marvellous, Jordan. Thank you very much. And good luck with your World Vegan Day and
you.
With your rescuing of those hens and all of those other things that you do.
And when the librarians are going, who's doing the fireworks? I'll say it was that Guyton fellow.
Quite right. Now, we're hitting our 25th minute, Rob, and I know that we're not allowed to go over time, so we had some other topics that we wanted to cover. Did we finish with berries?
Yes, and I thought it would be really good to talk about what to do in the garden this time of year. And November is pretty fantastic. You can pretty much grow everything. And we talk about why people don't grow silver beet and brassicas so much this time of year. It's because they either bolt or they get quite affected by...
People do, or the...
The cabbages.
Right.
The cabbages and cauliflowers get affected by white butterfly.
They do,
and
badly
so people,
affected.
People
yeah.
tend to plant them in winter instead because they don't get so damaged.
No.
But if you do plant them, a really good idea is to plant marigolds around them or some other scented plants that distract from them. But the reason why cabbages and cauliflowers are quite prone to insect attack is because that they're quite a manufactured plant, not like the original.
They're highly
original
developed, yes.
Developed,
they're not a weed, are they?
No, so we grow kale. We think kale's really good. It's more original brassica and it survives the white butterfly much more.
It also suits being by the coast a lot more, doesn't it? You could describe it as a maritime plant, the kale.
And we've got a question for people. We've got a bit of a challenge going on. We've got some wise old woman telling us that you can plant an onion that's gone... that's left up, you know, one of these big onions. And we've got some wise old gentlemen who say that you can't. And so everyone knows about whether they'll just turn to seeds when you replant a sprouting onion or whether they'll actually turn to onion. We've got some test trials going on and we'll wait and see.
The wise old woman versus the wise old men. It could get ugly. When you're talking about those white butterflies, the cabbage white butterfly, you know there's a new one in town or rather in New Zealand. Come down as far as Nelson, I think. So far it's spread down. It's very much larger than the ordinary white cabbage butterfly. So, you know, if suddenly it's a sunny day and a shadow falls across you and your garden, you'll know that they've arrived in Southland. But I thought, gosh, we're in trouble now with this extra big white butterfly attacking our brassicas. But somebody pointed out to me that you can only have a certain number of white butterflies in the country. It doesn't matter what size they are. They're not likely to be any more damaging than the thousands upon thousands of ordinary-sized white butterflies.
Do you think they'll come as far down as Southland?
Well, if the sou'wester keeps blowing, then no. But it's been very calm in Southland for many months now. We've fallen in a bit of a hole in terms of the weather over the last couple of weeks, haven't we?
And you can get a bacteria called bacterial...
Therensis or some such, yes. BT, let's call it BT.
BT, and it's, you can use that. And also there is...
It's a dehydrated bacteria that you can rehydrate and spray over your crops when the butterfly lands on the leaf of your vegetable, lays its eggs, and those caterpillars hatch out, start chewing on the leaf, which is coated with these bacteria. The bacteria attack the soft-bodied caterpillar and demolish it. That's what you were meaning, wasn't it?
And there's also a parasitic wasp that lays eggs inside the caterpillars. So there's a few biological things you can
gruesome,
do.
Gruesome, isn't it? Gruesome.
But dearest dust is not so good because it kills the bees. A lot of people use dearest dust, but it's not very good for the bees.
And pyrethrum. We have to be very, very careful around our bees now, don't we? Because there's been a lot of harm done to them already, and I don't think we can afford to play with that... with the work that bees do. Without those, we're in trouble. Everybody will be running around with a little paintbrush in order to do the pollinating, and that's no fun. Though I think they do that in parts of China. We are running out of time, so I wonder if we should sign off now. You've been listening to Get Down to Earth with Robert and Robin Guyton and today's special guest, Jordan Wyatt.
And the program was brought to you by the South Coast Environment Centre, and their website is www.sces.org.nz. And you can email us through that website and ask us questions and give us some feedback. It'll be great.
So it's good night from him.
And good night from her.